This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
A swing and a miss, and that's a winner! That's a winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!
Ranger, that is! Into left field! Hit number 3,000! A run to start!
Smith corks one into right down the line! It may go! Go crazy, folks! Go crazy!
A high pop ball! The Cardinals there! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant!
Breeze hits it in the air to center. We will see you tomorrow night.
Swing and a miss! The Cardinals are world champions for 2006.
In the air to left, well hit. Back is Craig. What a team. What a ride. The Cardinals are world champs in 2011.
Hello, Cardinal fans. Welcome to the latest edition of Bow Ties and Sweaters, where analytics meets the eye test, although my good friend Kyle Reese has asked me to change the name to Bow Ties and Loincloths. We'll ask him today exactly what the meaning behind loincloths addition to the title of the show is. He says that all of his followers will understand and that everybody will love it. We'll talk about it today. Maybe we'll do a Twitter poll and see if we should change the name to Bow Ties and Loincloths. I'm sure our friend Mo's algorithm wouldn't mind from our original segment. But hey, we come to you from the patio studios, the two birds on a bat, bringing you Bow Ties and Sweaters. Again, first episode we did last week, very well received. The fans that enjoyed the show obviously are fans that are really interested in a lot of the behind the scenes things that go on with the St. Louis Cardinals. We're hoping to reach a new listener, and we're hoping some of our current listeners, from the regular Two Birds on a Bat show, enjoy the dive into a different type of Cardinal fandom. I'm trying to become more educated when it comes to analytics. I've always enjoyed knowing about the minor league players and you know, what their role may or may not be for the big club someday. I've always realized that minor league players aren't just players that may help you at your big league level. They're also players, and historically in my time of St. Louis Cardinal baseball, some of them brought back talent versus, you know, talent that came up. Obviously, I grew up watching the Cardinals of the 80s, and then, you know, we all were aware when Willie McGee came up and what a player he was. And then it was Vince Coleman, you know, coming up and making such an impact. And, you know, we had the relievers and Todd Worrell and, you know, stuff like it was just, you know, I remember going through all of that. The next big name that I remember, the two names that I remember most when it came to minor league players when I was younger that, you know, you heard about all the time, Andy Van Slyke. And I remember him coming up. My dad talked a lot about him. He really liked Andy Van Slyke. But then as I started to like age into where, you know, I was more of my own thought in mind, and not so much influenced by, you know, my dad and my grandpa, you know, hey, this is this. The first names I remember were Jim Lindemann and Todd Zeal being young Cardinals that people talked about in the minor leagues that they thought were going to come up and they were going to be this or be that. I remember that for sure. And then that's, you know, then as I got older, then it was, you know, you started hearing more and more names in the minor leagues. Geronimo Pena, I remember. Eli Marrero, you know, just going through the years of the players. And then obviously when as I got older, you know, you started having more, you know, like J.D. Drew, when the Cardinals drafted him, what a big deal that was because of, you know, the situation of him not going before and going back into the draft. And it's just really cool things that went on when it came to understanding kind of how the minor leagues work. So, and then obviously we went through a lot of trades, during our successful years, especially when the Tony La Russa, you know, using players to acquire a Mark McGwire, using players to acquire a Larry Walker, using players to acquire a Jim Edmonds. Remember Adam Kennedy was, you know, obviously a top pick, and, you know, using him in the deal to get Jim Edmonds, and using players like Placido Polanco, who was a good player, wasn't in the minors when we traded him, but, you know, he came up and was a good player for us, and him being part of the deal to get Scott Rolen, and, you know, and so on and so on and so on. You do all this stuff, and it was just, it's amazing how, you know, big a role prospects play in your organization, whether they play for your big club or not. So really cool stuff. And I enjoyed Kyle Reese's segment last week. Mo's algorithm. I know a lot of people enjoyed that because they love the analytic part. I know they're curious to hear his thoughts on numerous things. He talked a little bit about the Cardinals in general last week and where they sit in this playoff race, but this week he's going to dive into some players, and I'm interested to hear it because I want to get smarter when it comes to the analytics. And, of course, Brendan Schaefer, who writes for the Cardinals, who has an opinion on what he sees on the field no differently than I or you, and I know you guys really enjoy the back and forth with that as well. So he has a nice following. But again, we are two birds on a bat, and as we come to you from the patio studios, we always thank our friend Randy Green at InnovatedCompanies.com for his continued support. Whether it's residential, commercial, or industrial, Randy Green is your man. 35 years experience, he's a second-generation craftsman, and more importantly, a man of his word. Check him out for all your needs. I don't say this lightly, folks. I've gotten to know Randy. He's the kind of guy that if he shakes your hand and looks you in the eye and says he's going to do something, he's going to do something. So if you need anybody in that arena, at least give him an opportunity for your business. Again, that's InnovatedCompanies.com. Before we get to it, let's just tell you where you can find us, twobirdsonabat.com. Subscribe to the show there. It's free. Now that we're doing three a week, it's really good to do that. That way you'll get a notification when the show's been released. You can do your shopping at Amazon there. Helps us out tremendously. We would greatly appreciate that. We're part of lineupmedia.fm. They're the fastest growing podcast company on the planet. But now they're home to Yo Radio. Go to your app store on your mobile device and download it. It's a great streaming platform for information, for music, for all types of things that are coming up in the future here. And again, for a streaming platform, it's what you expect it to be right now, but it's going to be so much more. So download Yo Radio today. I know you're going to be impressed with some of the things we're working on behind the scenes. It's coming. I promise you, and you're going to enjoy it. We're having more conversations every day with more Cardinal fans that are doing things to put together what I think is going to be a great Cards Talk station for you. So check it out. That's Yo Radio on your mobile device. You can find us on Twitter. We are at Birds on a Bat Show. If you're on Twitter and you like the Cardinals and you follow us, we're going to follow you back. Find us on Facebook. Two Birds on a Bat. Type it in. Like our Facebook page. Click invite your friends. Please do so. We're giving away stuff to people that share our pinned posts when the show comes out on Monday, Wednesday, or Thursday. So in the evening, when you see the post for the latest show, if you share it, comment on it, like it. We're putting you in a drawing, and we're giving away stuff. We just had somebody send in a picture of what they were sent. So we're going to keep doing that, surprising people, putting them in drawings. We're just having a lot of fun with it, and I know so are our listeners. Engaging in the post with the back and forth has been a lot of fun. You can also find the group Birds on a Bat on Facebook. That's another good one. I know you guys enjoy that one as well. If you're a Cardinal fan, we're going to let you in that group and have a lot of fun with it. Special thanks to all of our partners out there, especially Nate McHenry with RallySquirrel.com. He's asked Benji Molina and myself to be part of something new he has going on. You can learn more about it at RallySquirrel.com. If you want to be a member of the Rally Squirrel Club, check it out. We're excited about the potential for this in the future. He's got a vision for a new type of Facebook page. Why don't you go check it out and see what you think? Again, we're on this roller coaster ride again for the Cardinals. And when I say roller coaster ride, I think they've done fairly well since the Mike Schild era has taken over, for sure. There's no doubt about that in my mind. But the truth of the matter remains that they have a big task ahead of them. Let's just say that when Mike took over, they were basically a 500 team, kind of meandering. Where are we going? What are we going to do? Did that team have a hot streak in it or not? I don't know. We'll never know. Who cares? Doesn't matter. They went through that unbelievable hot streak and got you believing in them and what they could do. Well, in this world, what goes up must come down. I think we all realistically knew it would be tough to play at that level for the remainder of the season, although it seems like Boston's done it. that being said, I think some of this was inevitable. We had a lot of young guys we were leaning on. Again, I'm not saying there's any evidence that this is, just what happens. But, it sure seems like it to some degree. So I would say this. I'm not as concerned about some of the I'm not as concerned because I think I half expected some of the young guys to bring it back down to earth a little bit. But the reality of it is the Cardinals had put a plan in place. You know, we debated the Waino thing, the sixth start. A lot of people were losing their mind over it, and that's fine. Like I said, I like the interaction, but listen, you would be a complete fool to not wonder what you were going to get from Waino. That was never the issue for me. The issue was, I mean, come on. You can't – why would we treat the guy like a second-class citizen was kind of my thing. And nothing's guaranteed anyway. And we saw it in the Dodgers series. We worried so much about Waino. The other three guys went out there. Now, Flaherty didn't get his brains beat in. He went out and battled another top young starter in the big leagues. But, you know, the other guys, these other guys got knocked around. So, again, the Cardinals had put a plan in place to try to prevent exactly what's happening. Now, what happens there? I don't know. Does it work? We're going to find out over these next 10 games. Essentially, it's, you know, these first two games, things have went pretty good. You know, we're playing as we speak right now, you know, Jose Martinez at bat in Atlanta. We've got Jack Flaherty, who's been all that in a bag of chips on the mound going for the sweep. You know, interesting stat today. He's had an extra day of rest for, I believe, half his starts. You know, that's good. I don't know why that's a bad thing. If the extra day of rest that some of these guys have gotten proves to benefit them down this stretch, then it's going to be a great move. If something goofy happens, well, then I'm sure we'll complain about it because that's what we do. Things, you know, we went from everything's great in the world to, you know, right back to complaining about the same things we were complaining before Mike Schilt was hired and even blaming him. You know, again, that's what we do, right? So the roller coaster ride feels like it's back a little bit. Boy, I got to tell you, today would be a great win for the Cardinals. You know, they currently sit where they sit in the wild card standing, which is a game and a half up now on Colorado, not LA, as LA has beaten Colorado two games in a row. We have we're up two in the win column, one in the loss. Again, I got to tell you, I think the Cardinals are going to get in. I really do. I think they're going to play, you know, a wild card game. I think it's going to be, unfortunately, I would love to see it at home. I have a feeling we're going to have to go on the road into that bam box. But you know what? The Cardinals like to hit home runs too. So if we go up into that bam box and, you know, we throw our guy up there, I'll take my chances and let the chips fall where they may. In the end, the only thing that really matters to me, and I think it matters to most Cardinal fans out there, in the end, we're playing meaningful games with 10 games to go in the season. We have done that under Mike Matheny too, and that wasn't good enough. And I understand that. We got to get in the playoffs. Again, let's just finish this thing out. Let's see where it goes. And I would sure like to believe that we can do it. And again, I don't know if these extra days of rest are going to be, you know, what cures the issue, because it's evident whether you want to believe it or not that some of these guys are beat. Dakota Hudson looks beat on fumes. You know, The bullpen could use a break, and it's going to get a break, I hope. I'm thinking, and we're going to talk a little bit about that break, I believe, today when we welcome in our first segment of the day. And that's, I guess we're going to have to come up with a name for this, and I kind of joked with Kyle Reese about it, and I think we were going to go Prospects for Lunch instead of Prospects After Dark. So let's welcome in the man himself, Kyle Reese. What's going on, Kyle?
Not a whole lot, sir. How are you?
On the job today, are you?
Yeah, let's not talk about it.
Oh, okay. Lunch break. We don't talk about work on lunch break.
We do the lunch break for sure.
Well, I kind of teased what I think we're going to talk about today. I kind of talked about some of the guys in the bullpen running on fumes. I feel like it sounds like maybe we're going to get a new addition to that bullpen. I'm interested to hear about your thoughts on that. But first and foremost, I promised our listeners that we would find out just why you are interested in changing the name to Bow Ties and Loincloths.
You know, a loincloth, a codpiece, anything really that alludes to male genitalia. No, I'm a little off kilter. I'm a weird dude. And, I love bow ties and footers. It's classic. It follows most algorithms. I like that. But, because I'm involved and things tend to always get a little extra weird when I'm around, even if I don't want it to be that way, I thought maybe something along those lines would be a little bit better. And then as I'm driving around today, I was thinking, maybe we go for something more sports related, maybe bow ties and athletic supporter or
bow ties and a cup. How about bow ties and a cup?
That's what I'm talking about. Exactly. Something that just shows that, this is going to be good. But every once in a while, there might be something in there that you think, wait, what the hell did he just say?
All right, we'll go with that. Hey, listen, I had mentioned too also that I know you and I had kind of half-heartedly joked around about going with more of a prospects for lunch, because that's really when we're doing this, right around the lunch hour. So we'll just affectionately call your segment Prospects for Lunch. So
let's, I love it.
I mean, and I love it too. First and foremost, there are congratulations in order, and I know you want to touch on what's been an amazing run in the minor leagues for the St. Louis Cardinals. I don't think you can discount enough the reality that is what they've done, and quite frankly, with some of the players here. So, again, an amazing championship for Memphis.
Yeah, it was a hell of a game last night between Memphis and Durham. And, Memphis ended up winning 14-4 for the Triple A championship. And, it ends up being more of an exhibition these last couple years than anything. They lost to Durham last year 5-3. That was a pretty tense game, actually, as compared to what we saw last night. But in both of those games, there were a lot of extra pitching changes that might not necessarily have needed to be made. There's a lot of subbing in and out. It is a championship game. It has a championship feel, but Durham won the International League and Memphis won the Pacific Coast League. And I think for both of those teams, it's just as much of a load off their shoulders, if not more, to win their actual league playoffs than it is to win the Triple A championship. As crazy as that sounds. And of course it has meaning. They celebrate it. They get rings for that. They might actually get a little extra cash, and minor league players don't make any money at all. So if they do get a little extra cash, that's a pretty big deal. But it was a hell of a game. The 3-4 and 5 hitters in that lineup last night were former Cardinal Alex Mejia, who is no longer on the 40-man roster, but as we all know, plays a very good defensive infield. Randy Arozarena, who is one of my favorite outfielders. He's ideally a left fielder, but can play corner, and he has great speed and a really, really solid arm. And then Lane Thomas, who was playing center last night, who has busted onto the scene, having 20-plus home runs this year between AA and AAA. The three of them combined to go just an amazing, and you look at the numbers and it doesn't even make sense. They go 11-for-14 last night with 12 of the 14, driving in 12 of those 14 runs. And everyone in the lineup hit. Andrew Kizer had a beautiful double. Tommy Edman, who just might be filling in for the Greg Garcia role this time next year, a switch hitter who plays all over the infield. He was a leadoff catalyst on that team. It was just a lot of fun to watch. There was some good pitching, and it was a really nice little bow to put on the minor league season, not only for the Cardinals, but for all of minor league baseball, but specifically the Cardinals, because from top to bottom, there were a lot of surprises, there were very little letdowns, and it was just a great year all around.
You mentioned the name Alex Mejia. I think Cardinal fans are going to remember him because when, they went through, it just seemed like everybody was getting hurt. He got a call up. He looked overwhelmed at the plate to me at the major league level. Now, I also am real. Somebody had sent something in. I saw somebody send something. I don't understand why we discounted him, took him off the 40. Ozzie Smith couldn't hit when he first come up and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, listen. This is just my opinion, and again, this is the eye test for me. Ozzie Smith, to me, looked way more athletic at the plate when he couldn't hit, okay? Alex Mejia's swing was awful when I saw it.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's made changes. I have no idea. I don't know if a 5-for-5 performance is an outlier. That would probably be more for you and Mo's algorithm to tell me, but he just looked at the plate like a guy that I don't think can play at this level, but what do I know? I mean, the league is littered with guys that people have told them they can't do something, and they go do it. Is he a legit prospect?
No. I would, you know, he's not on the 40-man either. I would think if the Cardinals need a minor leaguer, a minor league infielder, they'd probably go Edmundo Sosa because he's on 40-man and he's younger. He's 22, where Mejia's 25, 26. You know, unfortunately, more than likely with the St. Louis Cardinals, Alex Mejia's chance of making another a major league appearance in a game for the Cardinals is probably zero at this point. You nail it. Look, he was never a particularly great minor league hitter. He makes enough contact to save him from looking terrible all the time. But what he worked on in spring training was just trying to put everything to the opposite field. And that was just to, I guess, expand his arsenal. And, you know, anytime you're a minor leaguer with a contact tool, anything can happen at that point. But, you know, his swing is clunky. It is all about making contact. It doesn't really matter what the mechanics are to get you to that point. It's all about using hand-eye coordination to put the ball wherever you want. He's a super interesting kid because he was maybe one of the best shortstops to ever roll through the Pac-10/Pac-12 at Arizona. I think he was like the MVP of that league his final year in college. But it just goes, I'd like to bring that stuff up because it illustrates just how difficult it is. Like, he was in the top percentile of all of the players in college baseball. And this is as good as he's capable of being. The 5-for-5 performance is an outlier. My guess is that's his only 5-for-5 performance in maybe his entire minor league career. And it's awesome. It came at the right time. And it goes to show you just even at the AAA level, how important it is to have that veteran presence in the middle of the lineup, even if that veteran presence isn't necessarily the most talented as compared to some of the others, in the middle of the lineup for a championship run.
Again, I'm understanding enough to know that when people see a guy in the minor leagues that goes 5-for-5, they start going, hey, why can't this guy play? I get it. So it's fine. I had a feeling we would go there. Let's move on to a great story, in my opinion. I've actually am excited to hear your thoughts on this only because you have mentioned his name before this. A gentleman that they got in a trade, Giovanni Gallegos. Did I say that right?
Yeah. They call him Gio Gallegos.
Gio Gallegos. You were intrigued by him when the Cardinals received him, I believe. Was that the Luke Voit trade?
Yeah, that's correct.
And you were intrigued by him. A lot of people are like, I can't believe we traded Luke Voit for this guy. You actually were intrigued by him. I think he's done well since coming here, and in fact, he's parlayed that into what is amounting to a September call-up with the St. Louis Cardinals to fill a bill, which I can only be assuming to be a help in the bullpen, because it sure looks to me like Mike Myers isn't right.
I agree with that, Mike. Something is off with Mike Myers, but it's actually kind of a nice little transition because the two of them are kind of similar type players. Myers throws it. You know, he can hit 100 miles an hour, and that's something we're not going to see out of Gallegos. He's going to throw it about 95, 96. My guess is that when he comes back up to the majors, because he's had two cups of coffee with the Yankees, when he comes back up to the majors, he's probably going to be hitting 96, 97, 98. We're all going to say, oh, wow, look at him. He can throw really hard. But he has more of that standard John Brebbia velocity, that 95, 96. You know, Brebbia can dial it up, but 95, 96, like, that's where he's going to live. But, you know, he was amazing for Memphis after being assigned there after the Luke Voit trade. He struck out 16.2 innings, I think. His ERA was 0.54. He wasn't allowing many hits. Very little was going for extra base hits. It just seemed to really click for him. Where he struggled at the major league level when being called upon, and he's only, I mean, his major league experience is less than 50 innings. He's still rookie eligible. But his secondary stuff is what gets him in trouble. His fastball has good run on it. It has for a righty, it has arm side run, arm side tail. So it's a two seamer, it's a sinker, and it runs really well. It's his best pitch by far. He throws a curveball, but he barely throws it. He might throw it maybe once every two or three appearances, and he throws a slider that gets him in trouble. He has trouble locating his slider, and that's where his make or break is going to come. His changeup is pretty solid. It works well with his fastball. When he's pairing those two up, he can get by with some stuff. But his slider shows signs of being good. It's just that he has a command issue with it. And, you know, as we learned from, like, Preston Gilmett early in the year, you know, you can have a sparkling, beautiful ERA with a sparkling, beautiful K to innings rate. But if you're throwing your breaking pitch and your fastball over the middle of the plate, major league hitters are going to make a mockery of you. So he has a chance to fill in that Mayer's role perfectly. I love the way that you frame that. That's dead on. But
Sorry about that. No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's it. I was going to say, but, you know, he needs to be pinpoint control. And he's shown an improvement in that since he's entered Memphis.
Well, I mentioned Myers only because I'm looking at the Cardinals bullpen as we head into this final 10 games, which is, you know, obviously, you know, playoff style baseball, and then hopefully into a wild card game, and then hopefully into a division series. So I look at it and I say, okay, so Carlos Martinez, and I'm just working backwards here. Carlos Martinez, Jordan Hicks. I think John Brabia has definitely earned his stripes and is in that mix. And then I start wondering where we go from there, because it's like I said, it's apparent to me that Myers isn't right. It's apparent to me that there's something wrong with Bud Norris. And it's apparent to me that Dakota Hudson's gassed.
Yeah.
I think the only way you get anything out of Dakota Hudson is if you basically Jordan Hicks him and shut him down for 5 or 6 days. And maybe with Myers not being right, maybe that's what Gallegos brings. And that's why I asked. And again, people like, man, Jordan Hicks is back to throwing 103. You know, I'm like, well, he didn't pitch for a week. I mean, see, I hate to have to do something, but people think, well, you're in the bullpen, you're only throwing an inning. And I'm like, you don't get it. It's not healthy. It's not a good place to pitch. People have it backwards. They think it's easy. The major league clubs, now, when they use a starter that they think is a long-term young guy, he ain't going to be in that bullpen very long because it's not good. Okay, that's number one. Number two, most of the guys that are in that bullpen are guys that are not starters any longer and couldn't start. And then every team in the league, I promise you, it's a three-year shelf life. If they could get 3 years out of a middle reliever, they would be ecstatic. And whereas fans are always going, they ruined them. It's not about ruining them. That's what it is. They're not good enough to start. Okay, now you have weird guys that stick around and are weirdly healthy, you know, for the long haul. I mean, you look at some names. Brian Shaw did it for a long time. That's a long time to do really well in that role. Lefty relievers that come in and throw to one hitter, they can do it sometimes because they don't have to dial it up. And then you have closers that do it for a long stretch that are freaks of nature like Rivera and Hoffman. But those guys are controlled guys. They only pitch when it's tied, okay, in a tie situation, you know, when you're at home, and they only pitch when you're up by three or less runs.
All of that are very, very solid points. But even to bring up the left-handed relievers, sure, some of those guys last 20 years, but even they have a small shelf life. And sure, instead of it maybe being 2 to 3 years as a quality reliever, it might go from 3 to 4 years. But even then, you know, and the reason, to your point, you're constantly getting put up and brought down. I remember 2 weeks ago, Tyler Webb, they brought him up and then sat him down to warm up 4 times before he was actually called in the game. You know, 4 straight innings, he was told to start warming up and then set back down before he was even brought in the game. I can't imagine. I mean, he's pitched an entire game at that point. He's pitched a start while warming up in the bullpen. People ask me with Giovanni Gallegos. I was asked this on Twitter a lot last night, and I understand why they're asking. Is Giovanni Gallegos a legitimate prospect? And the truth is that any prospect that is a relief pitcher probably isn't what you might consider a legitimate prospect. Now, they can provide relief over a short window, maybe, again, a three-year window. They can provide relief, but just like you said, a lot of the dynamite relief pitchers at the major league level were starters that were converted at the last minute of their development from starter to reliever to help the major league team. That's usually how it works, and there are exceptions to that. You know, Kenley Jensen was a catcher, but that's
so
the
was
path
Jason Mott. Become,
yeah, exactly. That's the path to becoming a legitimate prospect reliever. Is most of the time it's a starter that turns into reliever. Baseball is changing a little bit. You're seeing like the Cardinals. They traded for Gallegos. They traded for Seth Elledge. That was in the Sam Tuivasa deal. You're seeing teams start to be a little bit more aggressive about raising relief pitchers at a younger age. Like, it's one of the things that are changing in the minor leagues, but it still hasn't gone full scale. And until that happens full scale, that's going to be the truth when it comes to any type of relief pitching prospect and how legitimate they are.
Well, I mean, think about it. We as fans sit here and go, let's put him in the pen, because if he goes in the pen, he only has to throw one inning and he can go max effort and he can add 4 miles an hour. So what did you just said what the problem is. These guys come in for one inning and they go max effort. Okay, that's why they can't pitch every day. That's why they need rest. That's why, and it's just not. If you're in the bullpen, you're in there for a reason, and it's because you can't start. Why you can't start is a variety of reasons. You may not have enough pitches. You may not have, you may only have this. Whatever that reason is, okay, it is what it is. Now, we're running out of time here, so I'm going to go to. I loved it when you threw me a curveball last week with Kelly. Do it again. So I am going to do it again.
Awesome.
Who is Jairo Munoz? Jairo Munoz.
Oh,
who
God.
Is he? Who
so,
is he?
So here's the thing. The one thing that I've noticed with Jairo Munoz. Now, when the Cardinals traded for him, I probably watched maybe 20 to 25 games of him and Max Schrock at Midland, because I was trying to get a feel for them. And I watched 25 games or so, and I could not get a feel. From day one, I said that he's some combination of Aledmys Diaz and Johnny Peralta. Like, if you could combine the two, he's that. But there's something that's changed in him this year. He's actually bigger now than he's ever been. And he had a weight issue in the minor leagues. He would fluctuate. He'd go up and down and up and down. Like, every year he looks like a different player. The other thing in the minor leagues, every year his stance is different. His hands go high, they go low. And we've already seen that this year. Like, his hands are down again. But all of that's just to say that I still don't know who the hell Jairo Munoz is. What I think is he has a very good bat-to-ball skill, and it's better than I thought it was, and it's better than it looked in the minors. And the one thing that I've seen at the major league level that wasn't present in the minors is a fire. I don't think we give Jairo Munoz enough credit for being as fiery as he is. You know, he had that second base issue where I can't think of who the player was when he slid into him and like wanted to get into a fight with him, and the guy got in his face, and then he stood up and he was like 3 feet taller than the guy at second base. But you know, he gets fiery. You'll see him get fiery about strike zone. You'll see him get fiery about calls in the field. He's a super emotional kid. And you know, this is the most invested I've seen him in baseball. And that's how it should be when you get to the major league level. But the two big knocks on Jairo when he was in the minors was there would be times where it just seemed like he would take plays off and he'd get rattled whenever he made a bad play. And we've seen that continue into the major league level. I think what Jairo is ultimately, he is a third baseman, probably because his arm is a cannon, probably an above average defensive third baseman. And he's a third baseman as opposed to a shortstop, even though he has shortstop range, because he's better at adjusting quickly than having time to think. It seems like if Jairo has time to think, he can get himself in trouble, and we've seen that when he's played second base too. But ideally, if he had to settle on a position, you'd want him to be a third baseman with his quick thinking, quick movements, cannon of an arm. I personally hate any time he's put in center field. He had entering this year, he had 290 minor league innings in the outfield, 170 of them or so were in center field. It's sketchy out there in center. Playing center is tough. You know, Harrison Bader's as good of a center fielder as we've seen since Jim Edmonds, and he even struggles here and there with little things. It's because the ball is tough to read off the bat as a center fielder. I think Jairo could get away with being a corner outfielder and being fine and throwing guys out at second on the fly and wowing people with that arm. But, you know, if he fills a Ben Zobrist role and he can be a Ben Zobrist type player for the Cardinals next year, then that would be ideal, because that means you wouldn't need him to play third base every day. But ideally, that Ben Zobrist role with third base, everyday third baseman, making solid contact, probably hitting, you know, Johnny Peralta-like home runs, maybe not 20, because I think Johnny Peralta had 6 years of 20-plus home runs. Probably not with that much power that frequently, but probably topping out around 20. Like, he has the contact, the bat-on-ball skill, the walk rate, the play coverage, all of it, to be an above-average third baseman and a substantially – like a very, very valuable utility player in a super utility capacity.
Well, I will say this. I like the Ben Zobrist comparison. Benji Molina likes to say he's just a player. I mean, if you put him somewhere, he'll figure it out, and that's a quality and that's a skill. I mean, he's probably not a great center fielder, but you know, you get the feeling from a baller standpoint that if you put him somewhere, he can do the job for you. I will say this too: there is something to be said for a guy that you can put. You know, we talk all the time about, well, you know, he's more comfortable here. Like I see tweets now, people going, well, you know, all this trouble with Carpenter's at bat started when they moved him off first base and moved him back over to third and moving him around.
Yeah.
Just leave him for. And listen, there's nothing to say for sure that that is or isn't what it is, but you can make deductions all day long. If you have a guy that is comfortable being moved around and playing different positions and can still produce at the plate, that is a weapon. So that's great stuff, man, and I know our listeners love it and appreciate it. I'm enjoying the prospects for lunch. I think it's time now to let you go and eat your lunch. And I know that our listeners are enjoying. I hope you're enjoying our second go-around with this, and I hope there's many, many more. But for all of our listeners out there that enjoy your minor league insight and just your baseball knowledge in general, where can they follow you?
You can follow me on Twitter at KYLER416. And I do some writing for Birds on the Black. Check us out. We're incredible. All those guys are better guys and gals are better writers than I am. So it's only up from where I'm at.
My challenge to you this week, I'm going to give you a challenge, is we're going to need a Prospects After Dark or a Prospects for Lunch Facebook page and an Instagram account.
Oh.
So you need to get to work on that, okay?
Holy cow, I don't even know how any of that stuff works. I'm going to need to pick a couple of these off work, I guess.
Hey, I guarantee you know somebody that can help you. And you'll have plenty of people want to follow you. I know you're popular. So, hey, my man Kyle, thank you so much for joining us for Prospects for Lunch.
Thank you very much, sir.
Great stuff, as always, from my man and yours, Kyle Reese, as he joins us on his lunch break and gives us a little insight into what's going on down in the minor leagues. And I enjoy the questions, especially when they start touching into the major leagues. And that's what we're seeing right now, because the Memphis Mafia and some of the call-ups, there's no doubt they have made a huge contribution to this playoff run from the St. Louis Cardinals. All right, it's time now to take it on over and talk a little analytics, a little sabermetrics, a little numbers, a little stat head, a little stat geek, whatever you want to call it. But it's time now to welcome in my friend and yours, Mo's Algorithm. What's up, Mo?
Hey, how we doing, Jim?
Well, I'm doing okay. Just had a spirited segment with Kyle Reese, as I know you would expect and would love. Time now to get down to brass tacks. Talk a little numbers. I got to tell you, I was excited last night and intrigued by what you're going to tell me here, because they both seem to be interesting topics. Very first and foremost, I know you want to start with just who Marcell Ozuna is. Why don't you tell us?
Sure, yeah. So I think a lot of people got their expectations up with the trade of Marcell Ozuna this past winter based on what he did in 2017, and that's fair. You know, he had an outstanding season where he had 37 homers, drove in 124 runs, had a 924 OPS. But that wasn't exactly who he is. That season so far, based on his career, is a bit of an outlier, and that happens. Like, for instance, this year for Dexter Fowler, is an outlier based on the rest of his career. You know, it's been a miserable outlier for him. Well, it's just the opposite for Marcell Ozuna in 2017. It's an outstanding outlier, but an outlier nonetheless. So to expect him to perform at that level every year based on who he is a tad unrealistic. And if you take a look at his Baseball Reference, they have a 162 game average, which gives you an idea of what a guy would do if he played all 162 games in a season based on what he's done in his career. And he averages 24 home runs a year, 91 RBIs, hitting .277, you know, with a .782 OPS. And if you look at what he's done so far in 2018 with a week and a half, you know, he's hit 22 home runs. He's right on pace for his 24. He's drove in 84 runs. He's right on pace for his 91. He's actually hitting a little better than his 162 average at .281. And his OPS is at .763. Some of that has to do with his slugging. We all know with the shoulder injury earlier this year, he was dealing with issues driving the ball, which after this past month, we can see once his shoulder was healthy, he's having no issue driving the ball. He hit one off the wall last night for a single. this is who he is. And hopefully fans grasp that and understand that this is who Marcelo Ozuna is. This is the guy they'll have next year, you know, and if they choose to extend him, it's the guy they'll have for years to come. But to expect him to revert back to those monster numbers he put up in 2017 is just relatively unrealistic. He was also hitting around what was the 2017 NL MVP in Giancarlo Stanton and what's probably going to be the 2018 NL MVP in Christian Yelich. So he had a lot going right for him last year that he doesn't quite have in St. Louis this year. So, yeah, Marcelo Ozuna is a good hitter. He's a good player, and this is who the Cardinals traded for, and it's why the acquisition cost wasn't what it was for Christian Yelich.
Yeah, that was an interesting thing, too. I think people look back on that and think, man, we should have went after Christian Yelich, and I'm like, well, there's the issue. Okay, number one, Marcelo Ozuna went first. There was no guarantee they were going to trade Christian Yelich. Did you again want to wait and see? And then to your point, the acquisition cost was much higher for Yelich. I mean, were you ready to trade Jack Flaherty for Christian Yelich? I mean, would you have?
Would I have? Probably, and I would have regretted it come this time this year, because after what Flaherty's turning into, that would have made me sad. Even though Yelich is outstanding, I still would have been sad to see Flaherty pitching like that for the Marlins.
You know, that's an interesting little thing, because the reality of it is, if you look at what they got for Yelich, okay, it was Jack Flaherty in another organization.
Yep.
Okay, as far as the way, and that's how it works. It's where your prospects ranked both in Major League Baseball and in your organization, and then they start assessing value. That's what teams do now. They look at it that way. So, you know, the thing is, what's funny about it is, I say this all the time, if you just brought it up, if you would have traded Jack Flaherty and you would have got Christian Yelich, the truth of the matter is, Christian Yelich, I don't know, and you would probably know better than I, would his numbers that he's putting up in Milwaukee, would they have translated to Busch Stadium? I don't know that. My guess would be that the numbers would be down a little bit, only because we're not an offensive park. I would still say he would have been good, really good. Maybe not as great as he's been, but he'd have been really good. Now, the interesting part of this is if Jack Flaherty would have went to Miami, who knows what they would have done with him, if they would have done what they did with Alcantara, if they'd have left him down. Although I think Flaherty was way more ready for the big leagues than Sandy. But
sure. You
may not even know what Jack Flaherty is, so you may have looked at it and thought, great trade. I don't know. But having the knowledge that you have now, think about that as an interesting thing. If Jack Flaherty is who he is, and this is who Christian Yelich is, talk about two really good young players getting traded for one another. I mean, that's an interesting scenario.
The other thing you got to think about is 2018 for the Cardinals, what those two would have done. And I think Yelich on the Cardinals now with no Flaherty, they're not in the playoff race. I think they're too far gone, because of what Flaherty has provided to the rotation is part of the reason why they're still in the playoff race. Well, I think if you take Flaherty out and put Yelich in, they're probably third, fourth place. I think, you know, their rotation was so damaged, I think Flaherty really helped there.
Well, I think you have to, like, I always look at everything in both the player and then who would have been the replacement player. So I look at it this way, and this is what I say to Cardinal fans that complain about Ozuna versus Yelich, and this is really it for me. The question becomes, would you rather have Jack Flaherty and Marcelo Ozuna or Christian Yelich? It's that simple.
Yeah, exactly.
And it would have been whoever would have been in Jack Flaherty's place. Now, that person, like Gomber's already in the rotation. Ponce de Leon's already in pitching in the rotation. I guess it would have been Hudson in the rotation instead of being in the bullpen. And then Hudson, up until his last few outings, which he's purely gassed. And I mean, the bullpen is taxing him. It's obvious. What would have been better? I don't know. My guess is you're going to be hard-pressed to tell me that Christian Yelich and whichever young starter you want to put in its place. And, again, you can't say Gomber or Ponce de Leon because they're already there. So it would have been somebody else, okay? And there's no guarantee that anybody else could have done what Jack Flaherty's done this year. I mean, he is proving to be a special talent. So you have to think about that, and people don't look at it that way. But you have to. You have to look at it that way.
Yep, you do.
So that's kind of cool. All right. So, you know, here's what I'll say. I'm going to agree with you. I think after seeing Marcelo Ozuna in person now for what, you know, what's it been? What are we at, 150 games, 152 games?
Yep.
A little bit of a different player in person than I remember. Again, this is by the eye. He doesn't – things haven't been as smooth for him this year as what I saw in Miami last year. I don't know. I mean, you know, if you talk to Benji Molina a lot about this, which we have, and I know you paid attention to some of that, man, the truth of the matter is some of these guys, you know, they try really hard. And, man, he – I don't know about you, but I see that in him. And, again, it's hard to know what's in their head. But, man, he just looks like a presser. Now, he's having a blast. He's been great for the bench. I think that the team loves him, the whole thing. So I don't think those are issues at all. But, boy, I'm going to be curious to see what he does next year. I'm not putting the cart before the horse, obviously. We got a whole playoff run here to finish. But I'll be curious to see what he does next year because he looked like a guy that really pressed to me this year. We'll see what happens. But I would like to believe there's a little bit more in there. Like, I'm with you. I think there's a happy ground between 2016-2017 for him. That's what I think. So we'll see.
Yeah, the only thing I would add to that, you know, is the Cardinals may be in a bit of a catch-22 with him by having him for 2 years. Is his first year was he pressing because he was playing for a new team? Is his second year he pressing because he's playing for his big contract?
True.
So, you know, if you worry about him pressing this year, I would worry about him pressing even more next year when he knows how much money is going to be on the line.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that happens. I mean, we see sometimes that just translates into a great season and guys get paid. So who knows? Hey, I'll take
it. For sure.
I'll take it if it happens.
Yep.
Next player that you want to talk about is an intriguing player right now. This one is one that really gets Benji going. You know that from the show when people start criticizing Jose Martinez because – the guy's done nothing but what they've asked him to do. I mean, I'm going to tee this one up for you. And this is why this is kind of a passionate topic for Benji, and I think it's passionate for other people. I mean, right now people are like, I don't really care about anything. I just want to win and get into the playoffs. I don't care what the cost is. And be damned if we say something mean about a Cardinal player or whatever. But the truth of the matter is all Jose Martinez has done ever is what they've asked him to do. Okay? Play first base. Nope, yep. Go play outfield. Nope, you know what we're going to do? We're going to go with some other body. Even though you're the only guy that hits, that has hit consistently for the better part of a year and a half, hit the bench. That's what they did to him. I say this all the time.
Yep.
If Dexter Fowler doesn't get hurt, Jose Martinez might be your pinch hitter for the second half of the season. Okay? So all this guy has done is what they've asked him to do. I always say that about Matt Carpenter, too. Everybody bitches about Carpenter, and I'm like, why? All he's ever done is what they've asked him to do. Play third, play second, play first.
Yep.
Lead off, bat second, bat third, bat seventh, whatever. I mean, all he does is what they ask him to do. But that's all Jose Martinez done. And all Jose Martinez has done for the better part of 2 years is hit. He's going through a rough patch, and now everybody's freaking out. So why don't you tell us a little bit about Jose Martinez?
Well, the first thing I'll say is, yeah, he's having a rough patch, but in September, he's still hitting .214. Like, this isn't – and what really got me going is, one, on Twitter I've seen people just raking him over the coals about why is he even playing, why is he hitting second, yada, yada, yada. And then I see – and I think I know who the writer of the article was, but I'm not going to go there. I saw an article yesterday comparing him to 2016 Brandon Moss, and that's what got me going on wanting to talk about this today because – I want to say it was Hockman, I think, if I'm recalling it correctly. But I saw a tweet from, I believe it was him, referring to an article he wrote comparing what Jose Martinez is going through right now and why he's playing every day to the same as Matheny playing Brandon Moss every day in 2016.
You think it was Hockman?
I believe so.
All right, I'm going to have to see if it was him.
I think that, to me, that's just absurd. That is beyond absurd. What Moss was going through, he was like 2-for-63 or some stupid thing like that.
It was like 1-for-90, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was egregiously bad. Jose Martinez is still hitting .214. Sure, he has a 33 weighted WRC+. He's not having a great September. We get that. But the last couple days, he started to see the ball better. He had a double last night. He just walked earlier today. You know, he's still seeing the ball. He may have some batted ball luck, you know, not going his way. But in August, he had a 172 weighted runs created. Like, that's Mike Trout-esque production at the plate. And now all of a sudden, because he's having a bad 3 weeks, people are just going to revert back to bench him, bat him ninth, you know, whatever. And it's like, these guys go through these ups and downs sometimes. If you look at Jose Martinez for the season, in March and April, he had a 139 weighted runs created. In May, he had a 103. In June, a 171. In July, he had a rough month, 62. In August, 172. This guy's had two Mike Trout-esque production years or months in one season. And people are freaking out because he's struggled for 3 weeks. The guy's still hitting 302 despite this slump. I don't know if people had a misconception that they really thought he was going to win the batting title. But let's be honest. The Cardinals got this guy for free. And he's been one of their best hitters since he came up from the minors. And over 3 weeks, people are going to freak out about why he's even playing at all. Like, I don't understand it. And when I saw the reference to 2016 Brandon Moss, I was like, no, we're not having that.
Yeah, that's an interesting one for sure. Listen, I will say this. If I look at the Cardinals and Jose Martinez, I've been critical of Jose Martinez. Critical because, you know, I get fired up because I'm sitting there going, man, he's 6 foot, what is he, 7 foot tall, you know, and, you know, the guy plays, yeah. Guy plays in the big leagues. He can play outfield. I mean, he's not going to be in any gold glove discussions out there, but he can play out there, right? You have to be able to move your feet a little bit. You got to be able to track baseballs. You got to be able to do that. You got to be able to do that. His lack of ability to work his feet around first base has really puzzled me, and it fires me up, and I'm normal. Like, I'm like everybody else. You know, sometimes I say some things that are on my mind. But the reality of it is you can't discard him. And I've said it before. I mean, at some juncture, see, to me, it's about what you have. Okay, you have to work with what you have, not with what you don't have. Would I entertain trading him? I would, because I think – you could restructure the shape of your club by doing so, like how we're going to attack this.
Sure.
But in the end, he's who you have. And if you have him, he's got to play. You know what I mean? If you would have told me that, like, again, now we're going back to when they were doing this. If you were going to sit Fowler and play Tyler O'Neill, Harrison Bader, Marcelo Zuna, you were going to play Carpet first, and you're going to do and then go with Jerko and DeYoung and them, I would have looked at it and said, you know what? Okay, I'll do it. But the reality of it is I think he's shown us that for this team and with what we have, I don't think we can do that. So I know in the future I want to get into some of the numbers with Tyler O'Neill. I'm real curious who he really is by the numbers. He's an intriguing player, so that's going to be one of my challenges for you for next week. What do you think?
Sure, yeah, I can do that.
All right, sounds good. Hey, appreciate you. I know we got a couple places that our listeners can follow you. Why don't you tell them where they can do that at?
Yeah, on Facebook at Moz Algorithm, it's M-O-Z Algorithm. And on Twitter, it's at M-O-Z underscore Algorithm. And I started a new job, so I'm trying to be as productive as I can on there, but I can't always get on there like I used to. But still trying to get on there to communicate with people and express some opinions.
Well, it's good stuff as always. I know our listeners appreciate what you bring to the show, and I hope you're enjoying doing this. And I had to tell you that you know, we used to do bow ties and sweaters. Our friend Kyle Reese has asked that we go with bow ties and either loincloths or a cup. So it's either bow ties and loincloths or bow ties and a cup. So we'll have to decide that. Think about that. We'll do a private message between the group, and we'll come up with a name. So I just letting you know that that's coming down the pike.
All right. Sounds good.
All right, Mo. Thank you for your support.
No problem. I'll talk to you later.
All right. That's Mo's Algorithm. And again, I know everybody appreciates the numbers and the talk of who players really are versus sometimes who we think they are. And again, I love it. I feel like I'm getting smarter by the minute. Speaking of getting smarter by the minute, let's go to my friend and yours, Brendan Schaefer, who does a tremendous job and is writing for the St. Louis Cardinals. He's got thoughts and opinions just like everybody else, and I'm enjoying my conversations with him. Let's welcome him in. Hey, what's going on, buddy?
Oh, not much. How are we doing today?
I'm doing all right. As we record, I'm following along with the Cardinal game. I don't know if you're watching or following along, but it sure seems like Jack Flaherty is doing Jack Flaherty things.
Yeah, that's what they're going to need from him. Hopefully they can put some runs on the board, though. It's not been a problem the last couple of days.
No, it hasn't. It's shaping up. First time through the lineup today, we're not doing a whole lot. Hopefully we can get this thing rolling here. I was talking at the beginning of the show, the Cardinals this season has been, obviously nothing short of interesting, if anything. Obviously the managerial change and then the ups and downs. We talked on Two Birds and a Bat, and we would compare basically the last couple of years of Cardinal baseball to this roller coaster ride. They went through a stretch after they did everything they did. They started out, I don't know what you expect when you make a managerial change, but, first few days, whatever. Then they go on this tear. And I think people started saying, okay, here we are. This is who we are. Well, and then, what goes up must comes down sometimes, right? And we get into a, okay, now what's going on? What's wrong? We're starting to see some things creep back in. Is that who they are? Is that just a natural lull after such a high? Or is it just baseball, right? So now we sit here, 10 games left. We're fighting for our playoff lives. We currently sit in a playoff position. We're on the verge of a possible sweep with, let's face it, probably our best pitcher. I mean, I know some people make the case for Miles. But we sit here with, 10 games to go, and I like our chances. I think we get in. How about you?
Yeah, that's still where I'm at. I think I was leaning that direction last week when we spoke, and I think I'm in the same spot here today. I mean, you look at what they did, you're talking about the tear they went on, whatever it was, 9 straight series wins. I don't think any team in Major League Baseball can go on that kind of run and then be honest with themselves and say, yep, that's who we are. Because realistically, no team is going to win every series. Every team, even the Boston Red Sox, are going to have little lulls in their season. And so I think the Cardinals kind of leveling out at a level above where they were before they fired Mike Matheny is kind of what you were hoping for. And I think that's sort of what they're doing. They're kind of back on a little bit of a hot streak right now. And, it's just about kind of keeping the consistency in every element of this team. And as far as the starting pitching goes, I think what the Cardinals got out of Austin Gomber in his start on Tuesday was important because he's kind of gritting through it a little bit. The previous start wasn't a good one, and you start to wonder every time out, is he going to be able to give you a chance to win? And that's what he did on Tuesday, 5 innings, 1 run. And I think if the guys at the back end of the rotation can grit out 5 innings, give up 1 to 3 runs, keep you in it, and then the expectation, we can raise that a little bit for the offense because they've had their lulls as well. But the last couple of days, the X-rays hits have been flowing. If you can keep those going on a consistent basis, you know what you're going to get out of Miles and Jack for the most part out of that rotation. But to me, it's just kind of blending all the elements together, and even the bullpen yesterday did its job. And so if you can find more pitchers out of that bullpen than maybe Carlos Martinez and Jordan Hicks, that would be a nice thought. But in the last kind of sprint to this marathon season, I think it's just about keeping every element of this team as consistent as possible. And, if you win more games than you lose from here on out, I think that's going to be enough. I don't think they need to win, 8 of the last 10 or what have you. I think it just needs to be consistent, solid baseball, and I think that's going to be enough.
Yeah, when we did the show on Monday, we had 12 games left. I had asked listeners, what they thought. I had it at 9. I felt like it would take 9 to get in.
9 of 12 at the time?
I thought so. Okay. We got a lot of people that came back with 8, I got to tell you, 8 felt right, but 9 felt better, so I went with 9. I had told some people that had sent in 8. I said, I think it's going to take 9. I'd like to believe 8. But, anybody that said 6 or 7, I said, I don't think that's enough. Obviously, we win the first 2 games. That makes you feel better, right? Because so now you're down to 10, and you start thinking, okay, how many of the 10? L.A. goes in and beats Colorado 2 games. Now, all of a sudden, it's Colorado that's behind us, not L.A.
Yeah, root for the Dodgers tonight. That's for sure.
You almost feel that way now, right?
I think so.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think that was the race, right? Like, people are like, well, who are you going to root for in that? And I said, to be honest, I think the best thing is happening that could have happened, and I got to tell you the truth, I really didn't even care who did it. If Colorado would have won the first two games, I would have said root for Colorado, because I think if you could have got in there and got anybody to sweep the other team, I think that put the ball in your court, kind of, so to speak. So I'm with you. I mean, if we can find a way to win today and L.A. can find a way to win today, I got to tell you, if you don't feel better going into the last week and a half of the season after that, well, then you're just somebody that, I like to joke around a lot and say you're just a complainer that likes to complain. But that's the reality of it, to be quite honest.
Yeah, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, the Rockies still have a series with Arizona. And so that's still a team that mathematically it's getting kind of thin for them, for their opportunities here. But still a team that's trying to play for something to some extent. And I think that benefits the Cardinals if the Dodgers are to win today and the Rockies, you know, the Dodgers would then be kind of set in that NL West lead. And then you look at the Rockies as your chief competition, and they've got a little bit of a tougher schedule the way I look at it. I think the Dodgers still have the Giants and Padres and teams like that that make up the bulk of their remaining schedule. So, yeah, Dodgers, go ahead, win the West, and I think then you take your chances. And the Cardinals still got to take care of some business against some teams that are ahead of them in Milwaukee and the Cubs. But, again, you mentioned the 9 number. I think if I'd have answered that question on Monday, I'd have said 8, to the point that now they've won 2. 6 out of 10, I think, might be enough. But as you said, 9 kind of puts you in a position where you're feeling really good that you don't need help from other teams. So I understand the idea to just control your own destiny. 9 might actually be that number.
Yeah, I can't tell you the number of people that sent in 12. I thought, okay.
Some people are a little bit fragile at this time. We haven't seen the playoff team in a couple of years. I understand it.
Yeah, I'm like, hey, wait a minute. I'm with you. I mean, that's a tough one, but I'm with you. All I could answer to that was, well, that would do it. You know, well, that would do it.
It would.
You know, are you concerned at all with the bullpen? You know, I talked to Kyle Reese earlier, and you'll hear it on the playback, obviously. You know, Gallegos, what a great story. You know, gets traded over here in the Voit trade, wins at Memphis. A great evening. I can only imagine being that gentleman. You know, you win a championship like that, and then, you know, the manager in front of the whole team announces you're going to the big leagues the next day. You know, I had mentioned to him he's coming up here. In my opinion, he's coming up here for a variety of reasons. One of those being, very simply, Dakota Hudson looks gassed. Mike Myers is not right. And Bud Norris is not right. Something's wrong, whether it's hurt or something, or just done, whatever you want to call it. We need another right-handed reliever in the bullpen that can get outs in a leverage situation. So that's what I see, because I don't know about you, but I work backwards, and I say, okay, I feel pretty good with Carlos Martinez. I feel pretty good with Jordan Hicks. And I right now feel really good with John Brebbia, but who's that fourth guy? And, if Gallegos, I don't know what will become of the other three guys. Personally, I would do with Dakota Hudson, I mentioned earlier, what they did with Jordan Hicks. And now it worked out for him with Hicks, but I just wouldn't pitch Dakota Hudson for a week. I'd give him a breather. I'd give him a blow. I don't know what to do with Norris. I don't know what's really going on there. It's you can't keep having guy trainers come out and tell me something's not wrong with him. That's the one. Mike Myers is clearly not right. So your thoughts on Gallegos and what he might be able to bring?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a role to be filled there, as you mentioned. With the deal with Norris, it's just like he always talks about the hip being an issue that's ongoing. But, yeah, I can pitch through it. But like you said, when the trainer continues to come out, you don't really feel very confident in that guy being someone you can run out there in a deciding final series against the Cubs or a wild card game. And that's really what we're talking about here. Yeah, they got to get there, but once you get there, you don't want to completely run out of steam. So I like the idea about Dakota Hudson. If not for a week, at least for 4 or 5 days, where you say gear him up with an appearance or two before the end of the regular season and prepare, because still I'm thinking long term. I know that the wild card is no guarantee, but I think if this bullpen can get itself right, And like I mentioned, the other elements of the team can kind of come together. I think this is a team, a roster with the ceiling to make a deep run. And so I think definitely they should get Gallegos as soon as he's, physically prepared to do so, to get him into a game and see what he can bring. And Brebbia, yeah, he's going to be a guy that I think they're going to have to rely on a little bit more. And certainly when it gets down to the end of the season, when it's time to make decisions for who is on your roster in a wild card game, who are the four or five right-handers out of the bullpen that, if the game script goes the way that you want it to, are the guys that are going to get a crack at this one. You mentioned Hicks and Martinez. Yeah, we darn well better feel good about the way they're pitching. Both of them have the ability or the propensity to kind of be wild at times and make things very interesting, as Carlos Martinez did the other night, finishing out the eighth inning. So that's kind of, those are kind of the guys we have to take for granted and just hope it doesn't blow up. And then I agree, behind Brebbia, you've got to kind of find out what you can do. Myers had an inning last night, but all in all has not been kind of what you want to see out of someone in a leveraged situation, as you mentioned. It could be interesting. Gallegos is going to certainly get a shot because they're going to feel like he's someone who could fill that role. And if he proves in one or two opportunities that he can, I wouldn't be surprised to see them ride him all the way the rest of the season and be someone that would be getting an opportunity in a wild card game.
You know, I look at the rotation, and we all know that if they do make it to the – well, number one, if they go to a wild card game, they'll have an all-hands-on-deck situation to make it into a
Definitely.
Series. But the truth of the matter is, if you get into a division series, you go to four starters, possibly three, depending on how it works, right? So I would – you know, if we're going to do that, I'm going to save that question on who those starters would be next week. But the reality of it is, one of these starters is going to go to the bullpen. Actually, two of them, because we're going with a six right now. I have a feeling who those two would be, but I want you to chew on that a little bit this week, and we're going to talk about it next week.
I think I already have a little bit of an idea, but I'll tease it with I want to see Wainwright one more time, because I'm not counting him out either. I'm not counting him out after what he did against the Dodgers. So I want to see his next start. If he looks anything resembling what he looked like against LA, I'm not really going to be. I might be in the minority, but I'm not ruling him out as being part of that rotation. Whether it's a three-man or a four-man, I don't care.
Interesting, because I'll show my hand and say I don't know how you take the left-hander out. So that's interesting, too. Pretty cool stuff, man. I'm enjoying doing this segment with you, just talking baseball, a little back and forth. And like I said, some opinions based on very little fact for me. But, again, man, I tell you what, I hope you're enjoying being a part of this show. I know the fans are enjoying hearing your thoughts, Kyle's, Mo's. And I look forward to doing this with you every week. For all of our listeners and for all of your people that are enjoying finding you through the show here, where can they follow you at?
It's at Twitter, at BSchaefer12. And I've also got a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/BSchaefer12. And you can find my writings on the Cardinals, even the Blues, hockey coming up, and some NFL football I do over there as well.
Well, that's good stuff, man. Hey, I appreciate you, and I look forward to talking to you next week.
All right, you have a good one.
All right, Brendan Schaefer with his segment here on bow ties and either loincloths or bow ties and cups. You know what? I think we're just going to put that to a Twitter vote and let somebody come up with the name of the show. Mo's had no problem getting rid of the sweater. But does he want to put on a loincloth or a cup? I have no idea. So we'll just let the listeners do that. I'll send that out. I want to thank all my contributors today for joining us. It's fun. I'm enjoying this. It's a great opportunity to get them involved in the show. To all of our partners that make the show possible, thank you for your continued support. Arlington Greens Golf Course, located in Granite City. Get down there, play some golf. I know you guys will enjoy it. Tell Mark Guzzo and all the crew that we here at Two Birds on a Bat said hello. Adam Smokehouse, if you want great barbecue, you don't have to look any further than Adam Smokehouse, located on Watson Road. Get down there, try some barbecue. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, now up until 7 o'clock. It's not just for lunch anymore. Adam Smokehouse on Watson Road. Our good friends at Missouri Gators Baseball, GatorsBaseballAcademy.com. Check it out. If you want something different, something better, something fulfilling for your son or daughter, especially when it comes to these wonderful games, baseball, softball, whatever it is, check them out. Their four-pillar system for developing the athlete, developing the person, is as important as it ever should be for all of us. Check them out. I know you'll be encouraged by what you see. I know we've been impressed here with what they're trying to do in our community here in St. Louis. Lots of people that listen to this show have kids playing. If you want something different, check them out. That's GatorsBaseballAcademy.com. Find us, TwoBirdsOnABat.com. You can listen to the show, subscribe to the show, do your Amazon shopping. Find us on Twitter, @BirdsOnABatShow. Find us on Facebook, Two birds on a bat. Like our Facebook page. Click invite your friends. Don't forget to share the pinned post when the shows come out. We're giving away prizes to those that share the show. Comment, leave comments. Make sure you like the page or like the post. Help us grow the page. That's at the end of the day what we're trying to do is get more Cardinal people involved. The Facebook group Birds on a Bat. To all of our Facebook partners out there that have supported us since the beginning, RileySquirrel.com. Learn more about the Riley Squirrel Club at RileySquirrel.com to be part of that special club. Chris Lawless, Cardinals Nation, Cardinals 24/7. They do a tremendous job. I've mentioned to you before, they've got so many great things going on over there with their podcast. They're trying to grow their network as well. Check them out. Ron, Chris, again, amazing people. I'm enjoying getting to know them even better. Team of Rivals podcast, Cards Cubs podcast. You heard Kyle Reese mention Birds on the Black. Those guys do a tremendous job with their network as well. Really enjoying all of this and being a part of these communities. Some of the Facebook groups, Cardinal Freaks always support us, Mick Light at Art City Media. You know, our friends at Fans of Yadier Molina, STL Cardinals, St. Louis Cardinals Nation. Those are just some of the great Facebook groups that are out there that do an amazing job promoting St. Louis Cardinal baseball. LineupMedia.fm, thank you for your support and everything that you do for us. Learn more about Yo Radio. Go to the App Store on your mobile device. Download Yo Radio. It's free. It's what you'd expect from a streaming platform, but it's going to be so much more. Put it together now. Yo Radio. Download it on your mobile device today. For all of us here at Two Birds on a Bat, as we bring you what is currently Bow Ties and Sweaters, let's go Birds!
This podcast was a presentation of LightUpMedia.fm.